Hi, everybody. Good morning. So we have a reunion here. Erin and Marcia and I did a learning institute several years ago with Public Health 101, and we shared the development and how to do this stuff. So I am super excited. I have no relationships to disclose. I'm going to go over very briefly all this, you know, background stuff on how we developed it, the purpose, the design, early implementation, what we did, and I have a new mantra: sustainability, sustainability. Mm-hmm. It was logistics, it was planning, and now it's like, okay, how do we maintain this, manage it, and keep the work going over a long period of time? And this is really based on my personal and our county's experience, which I'll share with you as I talk. Okay, so we did this work. We started it because we wanted to transform the public health department and really focus in on what it would take to have staff do health equity work. And you've probably seen this, and actually, John, you said that you sort of adopted this in Lake County. And our vision is that everyone in Alameda County, no matter where you live, how much money you make, or the color of your skin, has the opportunity to lead a healthy, fulfilling, and productive life. And given the health disparities, health inequities of our very, very multicultural, diverse population, this is not something that we can do very quickly and lightly. So this was an initial graphic where we talked about what it would take to do health equity, that we would need policy and systems change, we would need community collaborations and partnerships, and we would need institutional change. So the institutional change piece is really this part about workforce development and having our public health staff understand not just the basics of public health, but what it takes to, you know, why race and place and social conditions affect health outcomes. So we did a lot. I mean, this is a project of mine with a number of staff. I think we started in 2004 and actually began the training process, the actual trainings, in 2007, 2008. And because we developed each module as we went along. So we were building this huge program as we kept going. I don't think we completed module 5 until we implemented module 5. So it's very similar to what you just heard about from both Riverside and Monterey. So creating and piloting the modules, we identified training facilitators, we developed a communications plan, we did early pilots, we celebrated early successes. So just very briefly, here are the modules, and you've seen them before. We called module 2 cultural competency and cultural humility, undoing racism, for modules 3 social and health equity, and then community capacity building. And then our approach was one of technology of participation, really bringing together or fostering the ability of folks to share and discuss issues, and then FRAEM, popular education pedagogy, because we wanted to create learning opportunities and spaces for people to staff, for people to really, really dig deep and have a chance to share and learn together. So just, again, very briefly, module 1, module 2, and you have access to all these slides. Module 3, in fact, I saw Rachel, who is now working on, the Raising of America. So this California newsreel, they started this Race, the Power of an Illusion, then they completed a Natural Causes, and now the third is Raising of America. And also they're doing a screening. I'm gonna do a plug for her at 2:30 today. So just awesome work. And this is very, very inspiring to do this. Module 4, social and health equity, and then community capacity building. What we did, and so this is why I'm really sport to talk about sustainability, because you can see the completion rate. So we have about 600 staff, and we had a completion rate in June of 2012, 86% of module 1, 77% of module 2, module 3, 79%, module 4, 70%, and module 5, 61%. So you can see that we did not complete the whole process of training 601 staff. And several reasons for this. We had major shifts in the organization. The actual unit that was holding this, including myself, changed and moved to another agency, another department. So we were split. Number of staff changed, and leadership just had a massive change. Regardless of that, we did have some results that were really, really positive for the health department. And that included greater for internal changes, greater understanding and enthusiasm for the overall work of social and health equity. Lots of people really bought into and were committed to doing health equity work for our population. And then in terms of how we were holding these conversations and the approach throughout the whole department, I think people really wanted to continue the work. So there's lots of like conversations and smaller, the programs who continued those kinds of dialogues and those kinds of conversations, particularly about, conversations about race and health equity. Externally, I think the growth of our health equity unit also was influenced largely by this work of developing the Public Health 101 and the concepts of racial justice, social determinants of health. And so a lot of our partnerships with the community and community-based organizations were founded on these principles. Okay, so here's the part about, here's my new mantra that I was telling Aaron. In addition to all those things, paying attention to doing the implementation really, really well, looking back now retrospectively, so this is, our last sessions were late 2012 and it is now late 2015, so 3 years. We have not done this for many reasons, as I said. And so this is one of the reasons why this spurred me to really think about and sharing with you, in addition to doing all that work, how do we sustain the work over a long period of time? And I found this tool, the Washington University in St. Louis, and they actually have a sustainability tool to pay attention to. And so I'm going to just quickly address some of the issues. So there's 8 areas of sustainability to consider as you're developing and implementing a Public Health 101 workforce training. This one with the money sign, of course, is funding stability, partnerships, organizational capacity, program adaptation, environmental support, communications, program evaluation, and strategic planning. So I don't have the time to go through each one of these, but here's, or through all of the issues, but the way to think about this is here are some of the challenges with each of these areas that we went through retrospect thinking about this, and then something for you to consider. And then also consider looking at the tool, because I think the tool is really, really helpful. So around funding stability, that means having a consistent financial base for the program. So when we were doing this, the program cost, so staff were incurred, they were not required to participate, but there are some staff, like clinical staff, who were then pulled away from their work and could not participate. And then what that also meant is that when they were at trainings, they could not bring in the revenue of their clinical work. So that was a constraint, either real or perceived, about funding resources for staff training. So how do we, it's really important to address funding stability. And then because this was really, really new at the time, we didn't have a line item budget that made sure that there was funding for the staff to do the trainings, you know, the trainers and ourselves, and also for staff to participate. In terms of partnerships, you know, public health departments have huge diversity in programming, from infectious diseases to maternal child health to violence, well, actually not violence prevention, but, you know, children's health services. So it's very, very diverse. And then how do we partner with all of the different programs and units so that there is a combination of, you know, commitment to this work over the long term, and that the content really, really fits them, so that it's, or that it speaks to them. So it allows or it promotes the sense of, you know, like taking on this work in the long term. In terms of environmental support, you know, I think both, well, everyone has talked about how leadership is really, really important. So when our leadership changed, and it wasn't just one layer of leadership, it was executive leadership and then upper level management leadership and staff level changes as well, and management level. So when the initial group of folks who supported this work left, either to new jobs or retired or had different responsibilities, there was this huge gap in who's going to do the work, who's going to support it. So somehow figuring out ongoing leadership support, and there is no workforce development group in the health department as well. So how do we do that? So it's really important to consider this piece in terms of sustainability. The next one is about organizational capacity. And so we've talked about, I mean, this group has already talked about, like, not just leadership, but who does the work. You know, Laquan is doing all this work on, it's amazing how you're doing it by yourself. I cannot imagine, because we had a training group of at least 10 people, and that's small. And then you, Riverside has 15, and then you're, you know, you got to consider the changes and who's going to be doing that. And then you got to consider burnout as well, because these are some of the trainers that worked with us. They said we can't do it anymore. It's just too hard. It's too draining. Particularly the one on undoing racism, because this was, even though everybody really loved that training, it was a very, very difficult topic. But the ability to finally talk about issues that had been, you know, like on everybody's mind, the ability to do that was so important, and at the same time it was really, really hard. So it's how to sustain, and we actually, this idea of EAP support, that's really important. So how do we support the trainers to be able to continue to do the work? And I think that is all, that also speaks to organizational capacity. So this other one, the Public Health 101 leaders had competing job responsibilities. So because we didn't have, you know, dedicated, we still don't have a dedicated training unit. You have to pull from, you know, people or request and so on, make sure that folks are available. How do we, you know, incorporate job responsibilities that include trainings? And then communications. In terms of logistics, we had one staff person who was like an admin person who did a lot of the logistics, but it would have been nice to have communications, and to not just communications, but marketing. It's like, how do we really, really, you know, engage and promote and, you know, encourage people to do this? I talked a little bit about program adaptation in terms of how to fit it, how to match this the topics throughout the different public health programs and units, and I think this is really, really important as well. How does somebody who is an admin person in, let's say, California Children's Services have the same enthusiasm for addressing social and health inequities with the manager of that unit? You know, so again, it's those difficult conversations about sensitive topics, how to make it resonate with everyone across a very, very diverse health department. ongoing evaluation. Thank you for what you talked about, Marcher, because it would have been great to do that. And how do we do that? How do we do? We had evaluations after each training session, but to also do it, you know, like organizationally, I think it's really, really important. And then in terms of strategic planning, so usually strategic planning is a way of, you know, making sure that things that work in a health department or organization continue forward. So they help guide directions and goals and strategies for the whole organization. So how to incorporate, you know, public health 101 workforce development training as a topic area to consider in strategic planning. And those of you who are doing accreditation work, you know that we all have to have a strategic plan as one of the prerequisites. So I'm encouraging you to consider workforce development, public health 101 trainings in that discussion. Okay, so I'm putting here, I'm being very, very optimistic that we are gonna have another iteration. and then how to revitalize the trainings, and then also like all these issues that, so again, these are retrospective thoughts, like looking back, reflections on what we could have done in addition to all the work that we did. It was pretty rough. I mean, it was very, very difficult, very painstaking. I'm glad we did it all. I'm glad that other folks in other health departments have adopted our work, and at the same time, you know, for this new iteration, really, really focus on sustainability, because it's important. And health, unfortunately, health inequities will not go away anytime soon. So this work of, you know, doing this on an ongoing basis over the long term is going to be really, really important. And then sharing with you the resources that we have, our website. So that very first one, you can take a look at what has been put up there in terms of sharing with the public our resources, our training sessions. I think most of the materials are in addition to the PowerPoints for each module. We also have additional materials, and now you also have Monterey and Riverside to look at as well. Okay, so thank you very much.
We have about 5 minutes left for Q&A, so we're open and take any questions you all have.
So I understand workforce development, and so your intent or your goal was to educate and create the capacities or knowledge of your staff. And I appreciate that you measured intent to act, but does your either or any of your health units have any sort of plan to incorporate those learnings into action? You know, you just want to increase knowledge, but I think the ultimate goal or intent, right, is to actually incorporate some kind of improved program planning or, you know, programs that embed equity and social justice into their fabric. So I'm just curious if you have that piece as well.
Well, I think in Riverside County, we haven't been measuring it explicitly. I think I can say, and I can get an administrator's viewpoint too. Sorry, Sarah. But what we are seeing is over the last 5 years are that these the concepts that we're actually teaching in these modules, we are seeing now being integrated into sort of the everyday program planning and, you know, the hallway conversations, the program planning, and the various initiatives that our department is undertaking. And we're seeing the language taken almost directly from the modules and used. And so we know that we're having that impact sort of on the whole direction of the department, but we haven't been explicitly measuring it.
And there is, so when we measured intention, we did it before development of Module 6, but then we were really intentional of developing Module 6 to address some of those intention areas too. Now we measured intention, we know what that looked like. Now how do we get them, for those who won't get to go out in the field and do the work, but how do we get them to apply it here? And then we're talking about now how do we measure action? So before launching the training series, we did provide a survey out to all managers and supervisors, specifically chief, branch chief, and ask them, what types of work are you doing? What types of funding do you have to address some areas of equity? And so we gave them some examples, and then they had to send back their results. Like, oh, I get a grant from this group, this is how I'm addressing equity. Now our plan is to go back and give that same survey again, same branch chief, and see if there has been some changes. Have they now developed newer programs, or have they even applied for different types of funding that really give them an opportunity to address equity and disparities differently than they did in the past?
There's another hand here.
So it's kind of related. It's more about facilitating the training and speaking to diverse audience. So I work in the Center for Public Practice at Colorado School of Public Health. So, and what I see is, especially when we're talking about equity, how do I bring the environmental justice? How do you make it relatable? You kind of spoke to the diverse audience. So I love the idea of having diverse persons in a training session. But how do you make sure that the environmental folks feel like this is relevant to build environment, to build in either community work or either versus? So how do you make the training relevant to those audiences, which goes into how do I apply it also and make the application?
I can admit that piece is extremely challenging. I find myself, I look at who's actually applied to be a part of the cohort, and you know, oftentimes we don't have very many environmental health folks, or we don't have very many behavioral health folks. But when we do, I do my research to make sure that I can speak directly to that audience, because I do have just a strong public health background, but not necessarily behavioral health or environmental health. So I try to weave in components of social justice in relationship to the work that they are doing. But also the thing that I found to be really helpful, if you actually get a chance, our modules aren't up online yet, but Alameda County's are. And some of the activities that they do, so that, you know, it's not just a lecture style series, but there's activities and learning across the bureaus. And so those activities really give people the opportunity to talk about the work that they do and how it relates to the concepts that we're discovering in this class. So leave that to them. Let them do that, you know, because they are the experts in those areas. That would be my suggestion.
And one of the big side benefits that we've been able to see through our training is the cross-unit, cross-program discussions that take place during these trainings. And really people sort of being able to break out of those silos that we all sort of get trapped in, and being able to sort of discover what other people are even doing, and then work through some of the problems through these activities in a group from people with different perspectives. And that's been a really nice side benefit of the training.
I think there's one comment over here, and then we'll go back.
Look down the road at opening and attracting participation by stakeholders and partners in the community outside of the workshop?
Yeah, we've done trainings with early conversations with community-based organizations, and particularly the Undoing Racism, and we actually involve community-based leaders to actually be the trainers. So it can be done. Are you more interested in how, or what are you thinking?
I mean, this presentation kind of prompted the curiosity and consideration of this kind of a focus on
how to understand. Yeah. So I think it's the approach of the facilitation that's really, really important. It's the ability to like foster the conversation and being very, very responsive to everybody in the room. I mean, we've had trainings where we've had, you know, like executive level managers and admin staff, and trying to bring together, you know, really practice what it means to have equity among that group across cultural, class, and spiritual levels. I mean, what do you call facilitator trainings, and I'm not sure if we spoke too much about that, but that is really, really another important piece of developing this whole project. It's the facilitators who are then able to, you know, foster that kind of, you know, loving, caring environment where people can talk about the most difficult, painful things. And to have, like, even our administration supported that,
So then we were going to do the module on race, and we were afraid. We were like, what do we do? So then myself and another colleague flew up to Alameda and came and sat in their session for the day. We're like, we're going for the day at least. We're going to sit here and we're going to participate in a module on race because we want to know what kind of questions will people ask, and are we prepared to be able to answer those types of questions?
I think we have time for
the gentleman.
My name is Bill Packer. I'm chair of the Council on Linkages and Academic Public Health Practice.
Yeah.
And I just want to make a pitch, if you haven't considered it already, to think about joining our academic health department learning committee, set up to facilitate the kinds of things Dr. Penny was talking about. The easiest way to do that is to go to the Public Health Foundation website, ehf.org, and just search for the Academic Health Department Learning Community. It's easy to sign up, it's free. And we have 500 members now, and our efforts are really focused on trying to promote linkages that you folks have demonstrated here between academic settings and practice settings to deal with the pragmatic questions that you've already dealt with. So,
thank you.
Thank you. One more question?
I was just going to make the comment to what you had said, that if your community is involved in some sort of a community health assessment or community health improvement planning process, like MAP, for example, I could see that the stakeholders who are involved in that process together would be a great sort of foundational group there in their organizations, perhaps to involve in some sort of external public health 101 type of approach. Even perhaps building a cohort of trainers for those other organizations within their infrastructure and capacity. I can see that as a great opportunity.
Great. Thank you all so much for joining us.